Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today on the show, we're going to talk a little about biological products. We often call them natural products. So we will be discussing that all during our day today, as well as taking your phone calls and answering your questions. If you've got anything you would like to talk to us about, agronomically speaking, we'd be more than happy to do that. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-44-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, and we are going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag right now.
It's the mailbag!
You know, Brian, we get questions from all over, and some of them kind of make me feel a little bit old. And this one comes from Clayton. He said, I've watched your show since I was 12 years old. You know, Clayton, thank you so much. I appreciate hearing
that. How old's
that.
Clayton? 60, 65?
I don't know. Okay, so seriously, he said, my family's got a
23 years. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, so my family's got a farm. We've been cash that has been cash rented for the last 7 years, and I'm going to take it back and farm it myself. My problem is it has heavy corn residue right now, and my planter probably isn't going to be able to handle that kind of residue. So I'm worried about getting the seed planted when I don't have row cleaners, when I've got all that residue. What would you do? I could bush hog the residue this fall, trying to get it to rot. I could work the ground in the spring. I'm in southern Indiana. I got medium to heavy clay soils.
Doesn't say the slope, does it?
Oh, he said also, if I broadcast dry fertilizer, I should probably get that done before I work it too, correct? Yes.
Well, that would be nice, yes. So if it was me, and let's say I didn't have a planter that I felt comfortable with.
He has a chisel plow and a disc are assets that he's got.
Okay. So, what I would consider doing is, so this is what we always used to do with corn stalks or, you know, heavy residue. We'd disc it first, then we would chisel it, then we might even disc it or definitely field cultivate it after that. So the point is simply this. Anymore, you can go no-till with a good planter setup, but if you don't have that kind of equipment, then basically, we're talking old school. We got to go back to, hey, we got to figure out how do we make that seed bed good. And yes, I'm going to do tillage, and I'm going to do it as soon as possible, because the sooner you do it, the faster that residue breaks down. So if it was me, I would try to do it in the fall. And I'll just give you an example off our own farm where we do some conventional tillage. We'll disc or chisel in the fall. Then we come along in the spring and run a field cultivator to basically get things leveled off. If at all possible, we try to put the fertilizer down before we do any tillage, because we do want to work that fertilizer in so it gets down into the soil where it will do us more good. And it's also more protected from erosion. Oh, the reason why I asked about the slope is if you have more intense slopes, let's call it, then you want to save your tillage for spring if you can, simply because we want to try to reduce erosion, or you wait to do your tillage until right before your ground freezes up. So like for us, that's probably going to occur around Thanksgiving. So if it was my ground and I thought, ooh, I'm going to freeze up around Thanksgiving, I'd try to work it right before then so everything's held in place. Otherwise, I would do it in the spring. I like fall because we create less compaction typically. So that's generally speaking the way we go.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Clayton. Really appreciate that. This one comes from Michael in Iowa. He said, I recently had some of my farm soil sampled and I'm looking to build some sulfur levels over the next few years. My 1 acre grid tests show a range of 5 to 12 parts per million of sulfur. I need sulfur.
Yeah.
My soil cation exchange capacity varies from 12 to 22. My organic matter from 2.5 to 4.3. Now, here's what I've done. Last year, I applied 22 pounds of elemental sulfur and 3 tons of chicken litter, which contain a total of 18 pounds of sulfur per acre.
Yeah.
So I put on roughly 40 pounds. The soil tests show that I also need zinc and manganese. Actually, most categories I need some improvement in. But as far as the sulfur goes, I'm wondering, do I stay with the elemental sulfur applications to build my levels as it's the most economical for me in my area? Or would it be beneficial for me to apply some of the sulfate form in addition to the elemental form? And if I do, would I have to wait till spring for those applications?
Okay, you can put sulfur on anytime you want, especially in your heavy ground. I'm not worried about it. So if you want to do it now, fine with me. The thing with elemental sulfur, it can take anywhere from a month to 5 or more years to break down. So I don't know how much bacterial life you have in your soil. I don't know how good your drainage is. And I don't know what kind of elemental sulfur you bought. So if I have good drainage, good microbial life, and I have a fine elemental sulfur that breaks down quickly, then that elemental sulfur is going to come available soon. But here's what I wanted to share with you. You know, with sulfur, it takes a tremendous amount to raise a good crop. Just even the grain removal only from, let's just say, I'm plugging this in the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app right now. Grain removal only for 250 bushels of corn is 20 pounds of sulfur. So that's figuring no loss, everything's 100% available, and you're going to remove 20 pounds just with the crop, plus you need another 17 and a half pounds for the stover. So you've got to have that 40 pounds you just talked about, even if 100% was pulled out of the soil. You know, that's barely enough. That's barely enough. So yes, I understand what you're talking about for trying to build that soil up a little bit. It's always a little bit of a challenge with sulfur because it's leachable. We have to be worried about some degree of loss. And elemental sulfur, I like it. It's a slow release. That part's good. It's just sometimes it can be too slow a release. And so that's why I made those 3 points earlier.
All right.
So yeah, I any way you want to get sulfur out, I don't care so much, but I just want, it's got to be available.
Yeah, the sulfur is a big deal though, and I do think you're onto something here, Michael. And like you said, you've got other fertility issues that need to be addressed as well in that field. But sulfur is a big one, and it certainly could be considered a primary nutrient along with N, P, and K, because when you look at the pounds of sulfur that you're going to need, it's a tremendous amount. And
right.
Our crops, and we're finding that's probably the most common nutrient we're seeing short.
Well, I don't know if I would go quite that far.
I would. People are putting out N, P, and K.
Yes, I know. Potassium is still more short than sulfur. But anyway, they're both super, super important nutrients. Well, we'll talk about biological products coming up next on Ag PhD Radio.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgrow brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgrow leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the end zone from Farm Shop MFG.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to be talking about some of the biological products that are out on the market and just discuss a little bit about what these products are, how they work, and so forth, and what you should be looking for if you're considering trying some different biological products that are out there. Good place to start here is with Tony Bucci with Ag Biome. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
All right. I know a lot of folks have heard about Ag Biome already, but there's still some that haven't. Can you talk a little bit about just what the overall goal is of what Ag Biome's trying to do? And then we'll talk about some of the products and some of the things going on too.
You bet. Yeah, Ag Biome is an agricultural biotech company. We're located in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. And we essentially partner with the microbiome to help feed the world. So we have a very big, strong, powerful mission and pretty serious about developing biological-based crop protectants.
You know, this is one of the things, too, as we talk about biological, Brian, a lot of times we'll say, let's just call them natural products, as so many of these things are just found in nature. And there are so many different microbes out in our soils that are doing jobs for our plants that we don't even understand yet. And I know this is one of the things that you're looking at in terms of just discovering new microbes and just classifying them and finding out what they do. It seems like a pretty interesting process.
It is. I mean, we're really harnessing, you know, what nature provides us to essentially manage our crops. What we do at Ag Biome is we take soil samples from all 50 states. We call it the plant-associated microbiome, where we take these plant samples and we isolate all the microbes that we find in them. And we fully sequence the genetics, so we know a whole lot about the organisms that are in and around your crops and the plants that you grow. And we take those and screen them against agronomically important diseases and pests. And the really cool thing is if we find something that works, because we've sequenced all the genes in every single one of those microbes, we can go back through our proprietary big database and find all the brothers and sisters of those microbes and really find the most potent microbe out there for controlling your target disease or your target pest.
I think it's interesting. We oftentimes in agriculture think about resistance and like weeds will find a way around the herbicides that we're using and these types of things. But when we think about Mother Nature, there's also, it's going to outsmart some of these things. They're going to develop. And like you're talking about when you've got diseases, nature's going to find a way to still produce. And I think about things like your product Howler, for example, and can you talk a little bit about what are you doing with that, where you're trying to fight diseases in a really different way from what anyone else has done?
Absolutely, yeah. Howler fungicide, we launched it last year. It's now registered in every state in the country except for Hawaii, which should be soon. And Howler fungicide is unique because it has multiple modes of action. So you can really use it quite well in a rotation program to manage resistant diseases. These multiple modes of action come as a result of winning in nature. Like you said, they exist in nature already. And the fact is that they've got to survive. So they've developed a number of mechanisms to help them be successful. And all we do is we harness those to help growers now manage resistance, the advent of resistance in their field. And you're absolutely right. In the field of genetics, we talk about what's referred to as the Red Queen hypothesis, if you're an Alice in Wonderland fan, which is where, organisms, they change all the time. And it's almost like you're running as fast as you can and you're staying in place, right? Because they're changing all the time. That's what the Red Queen hypothesis is. And so we're able to take what's in nature that's already been fighting this battle for years and years and years and saying, okay, how can we best use it to now control things that are on the crops that we're trying to protect?
You know, you mentioned sequencing all the genes in these microbes from all 50 states. I have to imagine that's a tremendous amount of data to look at. But what are you finding? What are some of the exciting things that you're learning? And I know you've got a number of products in development and some things already out on the market. Where are you seeing a big possibility here for these biological products to help farmers?
Yeah. So biologicals, you know, historically were thought of as snake oil. So efficacy is the number one biggest development. And at Ag Biome with products like Howler fungicide, the science is deep and robust. So growers should absolutely be asking about the science that's behind the products that they use. But biologicals like Howler fungicide do a lot of things. They allow growers to be very flexible. So, for example, Howler can be used at an in-furrow planting. It can be used as the last treatment that's used because it has a zero-day PHI. And biologicals offer zero MRLs, maximum residue levels, which means you have the flexibility to sell your product to anywhere in the world, essentially. You don't have to worry about residue levels keeping you from having opportunities to market your product. We mentioned resistance management because biologicals often have multiple modes of action. And the other thing that we're seeing with Howler fungicide, which is super exciting, is plant health benefits. So where we're starting to document some significant yield improvement, which should really make growers sit up and listen.
Yeah, there's so many possibilities here, and it's all out there in nature. It's really exciting. Talking with Tony Bucci with Ag Biome. Tony, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today, and hope to have you again sometime.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And if folks have more questions about what we're doing at Ag Biome, please go to our website. It's agbiome.com. That's agbiome.com. Thanks, you guys.
You bet. Thanks, Tony. We've got Trevor Dale with us right now with Valent. Trevor, how are you today?
I'm doing real good. How are you doing, Darren?
Pretty good. Pretty good. All right. So we're talking about biological products on the market today, and I know that the Valent's been heavily involved in this space. What are some of the things, and you farm too, and your family farms as well, what are some of the things that farmers are seeing right now with the biological products that are out there on the market today?
Well, just recently I've been visiting with some farmers that were using MicroApply EndoPrime, and seeing some really, really positive results this year. We don't have everything in, but it's, we're guys that split planters even and just could see it right to the row every other pass. And so it's really exciting. I can't wait for the results, all the results to come in. Even the farmers are very excited about it.
Yeah, it's fun when you see something noticeable out in the field. And, you know, there are a lot of different uses that biological products can fit for farmers in terms of pest control or plant health. When we look at nutrient uptake, that's something that's pretty measurable too, not just in yield, but in tissue samples and other ways. What are you seeing with that particular product? Are you seeing more nutrient uptake all throughout the year? Is it early in the season? When do you see a real difference?
Well, it's definitely not right away in the season because it takes a few weeks for the mycorrhizae to germinate and attach to the host crop. And in the case we're talking about now is corn. And then they continue to grow out and develop vesicles, or basically gas tanks is the way I look at it, to store water and nutrients. So they really work at the pleasure of the corn plant. So if the corn needs some water, they'll get some water. If they need nitrogen, they'll try and get some nitrogen. So it's whatever the plant needs, and they can go seek out for it.
When we look at that symbiotic relationship with microbes and plants, I think that's really the key here, is just trying to understand that and see where we can get them to work together. What are the situations you're seeing? This is an in-furrow play, Trevor?
Yeah, this is in-furrow applications. Yep, at planting in-furrow. We do have some other options now with different seed treatments. So we're really exploring all kinds of different things. But this is basically an in-furrow application at planting with corn. It's, you know, when you talk about doing different things, when I was thinking about the show, you know, Valent sells all kinds of products that help shape apples or make them redder or firmer. And so really just trying to take those sorts of things and bring them into Midwest crops.
That is excellent. I would love to shape my ears of corn to be 24 around and 60 long, Trevor. Let's work on that coming up. Now we're talking with Trevor Dale from Valent. Trevor, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the end zone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise seed selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Have resistant weeds invaded your cornfields? Tough 5-EC, manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, can help. When added to the post-emergence tank mix, Tough 5-EC synergizes the effectiveness of HPPD inhibitors on key broadleaf weeds. In fact, university field trials have shown 5 to 30% increased control of herbicide-resistant Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Now that's tough on weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about biological products on today's program. We're talking about bacteria and fungi and other things that are natural that could help our crops if we just put them in the right place at the right time. Talking to Kevin Matthews now down in North Carolina. Kevin, how are you doing?
Oh, we're in the combine picking corn. Actually, just finished harvesting the proven biological product, some of their test plots, just before the call here.
You know, that's one of the things that we hear a lot as we talk to our listeners. Farmers are always trying out new things and just seeing how they go. How do you test products like that? Do you do split planters? Do you do half a field versus the other half a field? What works best for you?
Well, we work with the cooperators, and they, you know, Dr. Princeton will pivot by who they lay out how they want it done. So we tested several experimental products this year and 20 to 40 acre sections. And so you'd want obviously checks with no treatment and then checks with the treatment. In this particular situation, every 64 rows, we would put 48 rows of a non-treated in and took it all. It's an 80 acre field and took it just about all the way across the field.
Yeah,
and that gives us a really good real farming environment test as to how it does. Some of them you don't see much results in, and the other ones seem to stand out. It's just you got to really find out what works in your soil and your environment.
I know in our area with some variable soils and especially in some rolling hills, it's kind of fun to look at those trials and break them down to see, hey, this worked in the low, heavy ground. It didn't work in the high, sandy ground or vice versa. And those types of things really help with where can I position this on my farm to really win. What are some of the other things you're looking at? Are you looking at things to put nutrients in? Are you looking at anything for pest control that's a biological?
We hadn't really focused on the pest control side. I think it's very interesting. I think it's something we need to be looking at, especially with our infura. If we could put it in infura, the ability to do infura is so much easier nowadays. So many options out there. It does a great job. And, you know, anytime we can remove pesticides and go with a natural product, it's just being good stewards of the land. And I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I was just talking with a developer of biological products before the show today, and one comment that they had made was, we have to put our products into a usable form for farmers because there's only so many ways they can get them out there, and it's got to be really easy to handle. Do you ever get into a problem like that? You're trying something new, and it's like, oh, man, that made a mess in my tank, or it was tough to get out there.
Oh, Lord, yeah. Our aerial applicator, I mean, he was from Germany, and he can say some words that I can't quite understand when you mess his tank up. He's not happy. But, you know, we've made, Lord, I'll never forget BASF. They got she turned out to be a great, great rep, but she was fresh out of school, and she comes, hey, I want you guys to try this fungicide in Infura. And so I said, okay, well, this is the products that we're running. Is all that compatible? Oh, yeah, it'll work great. Oh, Lord, darn. It took us about, it took the guys probably 6 to 8 hours of getting all that mess out of the plug lines. So, oh, we've had all kinds of mess ups. And but that's how you find out. You know, you got to test it and see what works. And the biologicals, though, we've had a lot less antagonism with other products compared to other things that we've tried in the past, but they seem to work better, and they're getting them in a lot better form. Now we one of the early ons, we did a product for a company, and you had to let it incubate in the tank for like 6 hours before you could use it. And I'm like, you know, there ain't no farmer going to wait 6 hours to, you know, this just don't work. Well, then we went to harvest the plot that fall. And Lord, it was a 12 bushel advantage where we used that product. And I was like, well, we got to figure out how to make this work that's easy for us, because it does have a significant yield impact. But so, you know, that on-farm research you mentioned earlier, that's where it's at. You just got to find out what works for you. Get a good team and go with it.
Yep, I agree. We worked with a product, too, that needs to be frozen until just before you're going to use it. And some of those things, if the handling characteristics are tough and difficult for a farmer, that, man, I'm going to be an hour away from home. I can't have a frozen product and hope it's going to stay that way when it's 80 or 90 degrees
out. We used one of them this spring. I don't know how much money we spent on ice, keeping it iced down to be ready to use. And actually, you speak of that on that particular plot. It was a significant yield difference. I don't know. I hadn't seen the data to know which one of them it was, whether it was the product that was frozen or the finished product. But it's kind of interesting. After I fussed about buying all that ice, I might end up eating crow that was the one that done the best.
Okay, so we've got some developers of these products that are listening to the show today, and they're curious, what are farmers looking for? So if you had a wish, Kevin, what would it be if you said, man, I'd like biological products that could do this or that on my farm? What are some needs that you would have?
Well, anytime you can decrease the amount of nutrients that you need to purchase commercially, offset that, that's just being good stewards of your land and the waterways, and that's a win-win for us. And absolutely, if we can reduce pest damage to the plants and not have to buy insecticide, that's a big deal. End of the day, it's got to be economical. It's got to have a net return on it, and it's got to be compatible or user-friendly. Those are the key things that we look at. And simple. I mean, you can't be mixing four or five different concoctions together every time. We're trying to get acres in the ground, and so I guess that's more than one answer, but those are some key components that we look at.
No, I agree. You really definitely have to have a positive return on investment, and you do have to keep it simple. All right, so talk to us. You're harvesting corn. How would you characterize this year's crop in your area?
We was blessed this year. We had some corn that pollinated in some tough times, and it wasn't as good a yield, but the overall farm average is one of the better ones in the last 4 years, which we've had three bad years in a row. We've been blessed. Our soybeans are doing phenomenal. The tropical storm was no friend to us. Zeta, I think we've had six. I think it's Zeta between hurricanes, tropical storms since May. And that, I've been picking some blowed down corn pretty bad there. I don't like it, but wasn't nothing like 2018. You guys seen what we dealt with then, but the lowland did flood, and it's real nasty, but overall, we're okay. The eastern part of the state, those boys has not had a good year. That hurricane come in early, and it was kind of like the derecho event that the Midwest faced, and they had a lot of damage, and you know, thank goodness the commodity prices has come up, and hopefully that'll help soften the blow for some of those guys, and they have the option this year of having wind insurance that we've not been able to get in the past on the East Coast due to our active hurricanes. So that's going to help those boys out. But it's, you know, it's looking better. The grain market was friendly today. So, you know, God's good to us. So we can't complain too much.
Yeah, it's good to have some things to be optimistic about. You're right, with the prices turning around a little bit, that sure helps on the farm, no doubt about
that.
Yeah,
and we needed it. Agriculture, it's been some real tough years, and, you know, these equipment prices are just so high. Our inputs is astronomical compared to what it was just a few years ago. So it takes a lot of bushels or a real good price per bushel to offset that cost.
Yeah, it sure does. Talking with Kevin Matthews here in North Carolina. Kevin, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay safe here the rest of harvest season.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Al. Have a good day.
Talking about some of the biological products out there and some of the different things going on in agriculture, we're also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We're going to dive back into some AG-PHD mailbag questions here in just a minute. That will be interesting. There's a lot of things going on there, a few soil samples, and I think a couple of questions about these biological products as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office office or visit MortonBuildings.com.
You're looking for soybeans that give you the yield you want. But when it comes to fighting your toughest weeds, you also need flexibility. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics with triple tolerance to dicamba, glyphosate, and glufosinate. The yield you want, the choice you need. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. When I mentioned we were going to be talking about biological products, what was your reaction? Were you thinking, oh no, it's a snake oil type thing? Or were you thinking, oh cool, we're going to talk about natural things instead of all the chemistry and stuff? I know a lot of times Brian and I will get accused, oh no, all you guys want to do is spray more chemicals out there. No, that's the last thing we want to do. That's our last resort. We want to do everything we can culturally. We want to do everything we can naturally. We want to do everything we can, if you want to call it, organically first. And yeah, then if we've got weeds out there and we have no other way to get them under control, well, here we go, or bugs or so forth. So I do like the idea of working with nature symbiotically as much as possible, where we get our plants to help feed the microbes in the soil or whatever program we're doing to put more microbes in the right place at the right time.
Okay, your first question that you asked here just a minute ago, though, most everybody, I'd bet 80 to 90% of farmers are thinking snake oil. So, and believe me, I am super skeptical.
That's how we were brought up on the farm too, Brian. Yep, that's what Dad thought.
Yep, but I mean, honestly, I have always been super skeptical of these kinds of products as well. Now, I will say there is a lot of science behind this stuff, and if you find the right product and put it in the right place, you can get results. So on our farm, for example, we've been testing biologicals for probably 15 years now. We've got a few that we like and a few that really work for us, and we have a whole bunch where we've said, yeah, no, we're not using that anymore. Just didn't pan out after even 2 or 3 years worth of trials. So I'll start with this. Seed treatments. We are putting a lot of things on the seed in order to help pop that seed out of the ground and to have more plant nutrients inside the crop. So when we first started doing biological testing years ago, one of the things that we just said, hey, we can't just say, all right, we're going to try this and then we're going to check the yield. Because, yeah, we know the end result, but we want to know why. Why are we getting more at the end? And if there is no evidence why we should get more, then it absolutely explains, okay, we tested something, we saw no visual evidence, had no more nutrients in the plant, nothing changed with the soil, the crop was the same, the yield was the same. Well, that was a waste of our time, right? But on the other hand, if the yield is really good, or you know, maybe it's not so good, but we saw definite things during the season, we say, okay, now we realize this changed, this happened for us, so let's put it in an even better spot. My example is on some of these seed treatments that we're using now, we can pop seed out of the ground, I don't care what seed it is, faster, like 10 to 20% faster. And also then we have more nutrients in the plant, and we prove that out by doing plant tissue analysis every week. And we go, okay, well, if I can get faster emergence and I have more nutrients in the plant, well, this is starting to make a lot of sense. And then we can see why the yield gain is happening. Also, when you think about it, who needs help more in terms of popping the seed out of the ground faster and giving more early vigor? A farmer in North Dakota or a farmer in Mississippi? When you're in North Dakota, let's face it, the weather's against you basically every month of the year. So any help you can possibly get to advance that seed and give you more early vigor, that's going to be more of an advantage for you than it would be somebody in Mississippi. So not saying that biologicals don't work in Mississippi. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying in my example of something that can give you, in effect, better cold tolerance and better cold emergence, that's a bigger deal if you're actually cold where you farm. So anyway, I really would encourage you, try some of these biological or natural products out. But when you do, do side-by-sides on your farm. Do visual observations, and absolutely do plant tissue analysis every week for probably 8 to 12 weeks. And you might be saying, well, boy, Brian, this sounds like a lot of work. Well, it's a little bit of work, but the thing is, if you want to truly test something, that's what you do. And it doesn't take much time. It doesn't cost all that much money, especially if you put it, let's say, close to where you live, not your furthest field away or anything like that. It's going to make it a lot easier. But when you analyze that stuff, you do some root digs, and then you know you're giving it your visual observations every week or so. Then you can see, okay, I'm noticing something different here, or yeah, no, this isn't changing anything. And then obviously, you get to the end of the year, if you have no change, it's not going to surprise you when your yield is the same. So yeah, we've tested a lot of things over the years. The seed treatment thing's really, in my opinion, at the moment, the best. I would also say we do use some plant growth hormones. We really like that. So there's MegaGrow, for example, that's a proven crop safener for Roundup. We've absolutely reduced the yellow flash. And so that's really helped, especially as we've gone to some higher glyphosate rates on Roundup-resistant crops. Beyond that, I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that I'd say, oh, you got to try that. Oh, in the fall, there's a product we're using now, Decomp, that we're seeing much faster breakdown of residue. So for you, that might not be a big deal. For us, it is, because we're in a colder climate. We have lots of residue because we're getting some fairly good yields, and there's just a lot of residue out there. We want it broken down faster, and I don't want to bale it off or anything because there are too many nutrients in there. I don't want to give it away. Now, I realize we get something for our bales, but when I run the calculations, it's like, I just don't think it's worth it selling that off. So for our situation. So anyway, yeah, lots of things for you to try. We just encourage you be open to trying some things, but if you're going to try it, you got to give it a fair shake and a good evaluation, and then you can make your decision from there. A lot of these things too do not cost a whole lot of money. So many of the products we're using are $5 to $7 an acre. So no real huge deal, and we've seen some good advantages. All right, let's get back to the Ag PhD mailbag.
All right, got three tests here. One of those is a two-sided printing. This is from Lee up in Manitoba, and he said, we are on some lower-class sandier saline soil. I was curious about, on your program, you mentioned trying to lower pHs in soils. We're generally over 8. So I'm looking for any information or thoughts about what I could do to change my pH. Going to silage corn on the two fields that say by the tree line, if that makes any difference.
Okay, so we talk about soils on the show here real often, and we always say, look at the soil pH first. Now, that just because we say that, that does not mean that's the most important thing for you to change. Most likely, it's going to give you a decent return, but we got to figure out, well, why are we high in the first place, like in this example? So when we look at it, we say, all right, you know what? And most of the time when we have a high pH, it's a drainage issue. And so I'm looking here and I see lots of chloride, lots of sulfur, lots of carbonates. Let's see, I just wanted to see boron. Boron isn't exceptionally high, but I'm just looking for a lot of these leachables. When I see leachables really high, that tells me we have a drainage issue. So if it's me, I'm probably going to consider adding some drain tile. Oh, and he said, I just heard the word sand. I don't remember what exactly he called it for a soil type. But here's what we have for cation exchange capacity. 27.7 up to 32.5. Now, does that sound like sand to you? No. And this is the reason why we always say we want a cation exchange capacity number. Because what I call sand is going to be different than what somebody else calls sand. So if you're in Virginia, for example, you're probably going to call sand about a 3 for a cation exchange capacity, and that's what I would call it too. So 3 is a lot different than 30. This is a very heavy soil, and the odds are extremely high we got a drainage issue. So number one, I would consider drainage if I can. Number two, I look at my potassium levels. I'm at 0.4% base saturation K up to 1.2% base saturation K. So I realize you got some parts per million there, but you're really low. 46 parts per million up to 150 parts per million. So here's my whole point. When I look at your soil test, yes, the soil pH is concerning to me. And I'm going to say, hey, if I can fix my drainage, that's great. And that will start to lower my pH. But the next thing is, I'm going to say, boy, I got to get my phosphorus levels up. They're what I would call really, really deficient. My potassium levels are really deficient. And those are the first two things that I'm going to get addressed out there. Once I get my P and my K up, then I'm going to start looking at some of the micronutrients as well. So, for example, copper is deficient, zinc is deficient, boron is on the low side. So I got a number of things to address, and then that also will, over time, help lower that soil pH as you get your nutrients a little more balanced. Well, stay tuned. We've got more of your questions right after this.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Dees supply representative today.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
When it comes to leading herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Cheetah, a high-quality glufosinate herbicide made right here in the USA. Now for use on a wide variety of crops with glufosinate-resistant traits, including Enlist crops. Its novel mode of action will manage existing or emerging herbicide resistance and provide fast, effective results. This means you can focus more on profitability and less on weeds. Nufarm and Cheetah Herbicide, here to help.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind Infurrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We are in the Ag PhD mailbag time. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD or your emails at radio@agphd.com. Take this one from AN, who says, I really enjoy your program. I love your videos you're posting. I'm a small-scale organic producer, but I definitely love to cherry-pick some information from you guys. Your videos, especially on soil pH, have been some of my favorite. Hey, thanks a lot. You know, we're talking about all the things that we're doing, and certainly there's some things that apply to the organic markets and there's some things that don't, but I agree with you. There's good information to pick depending on what you're doing in your operation. All right, got this one from BK. Says it ran a soil test that's showing my zinc levels are at a very high level of 23.8 parts per million. My Olson bicarb P test is at 52 parts per million. I'm using the Olson test since my pH is high at 7.8.
Great question.
So my ratio is approximately 2:1 between phosphorus and zinc, which is far from your 8:1 or 10:1 ratio.
Yep.
Now, I hear a lot of talk about zinc deficiency. However, I can't find much about what to do when I have super high levels of zinc. So I'm prioritizing getting my pH down, and hopefully that corrects a lot of issues in my soil. But I'm wondering, what's the fix in order to get the P to zinc ratio proper? What might be some causes for such a high zinc level?
Put more phosphorus on. Somehow you got too much zinc out there somehow, some way.
Here's his suspicion. He said this land was previously used by a chrysanthemum nursery. And I don't know much about chrysanthemum production, but I'm wondering if they use a lot of zinc.
Okay. Now, here's the next thing. This is for one spot. I don't know if this is 1 acre, 5 acres, 50 acres, 500 acres. Where I'm concerned is if it's more than, let's call it 3 to 5 acres, I doubt that that's the right ratio. In other words, I'm just saying that zinc level isn't going to be consistent all throughout the field. So make sure that you're doing a zone test, grid test, whatever it is, or, you know, with small zones and small grids rather than just one big composite test. But yeah, your only way to solve this problem is you have to put more phosphorus on. That's it. You can't leach the zinc out of the ground. It's very immobile in the soil. And I've talked about this a little bit. I hated to go into this, but I will because I think you need to hear this. On our show over the last few months and really the last couple of years, we've talked about how we've been comparing on our farm all these grid points. We do 1 acre grids now. This will be the third year in a row. And we farm 3,200 acres. So we're getting 2,000 to 2,500 acres sampled every year. So we got all these grid points. And then we match up every single grid point with the closest yield point coming off our yield monitor. And by the way, when you soil test, just make sure for you or whoever's doing the soil test, you go to a GPS spot and you go in about a 5 foot radius and pull samples. You do not pull samples all across 5 acres or 10 acres or 50 acres or whatever it is. You need a GPS spot in order to be able to do what I'm talking about here. And this is the future. This is how eventually most people are going to do it because it is unbelievably powerful data. Because of this, it's allowed us to learn so much more about soil fertility. And when we see that phosphorus to zinc ratio get down to 2:1 or 3:1, like you're talking about, our yields fall. And they fall, I'm not going to say dramatically hard, but fairly hard. And the only fix is you got to get more phosphorus out there. Now, when you do that, because we've done that, then we made the next mistake, not having copper also in ratio. So what we found is the ratio of phosphorus to zinc is roughly 8:1, 10:1, somewhere in there. I would just say as a general rule, 10:1. Then you got to look at phosphorus to copper. That's roughly 30:1, maybe 40:1, something like that. Okay, we've gotten both ratios too low, and it's really hurt us. So make sure that you've got enough copper in relation to phosphorus. Make sure you have enough phosphorus in relation to zinc, and you should be in pretty good shape. That is absolutely what I would do.
All right. Speaking about nutrients, I got a couple of molybdenum questions and comments here. Robert in Arkansas said, back 50 years ago in the late 60s, early 70s, we used to put molybdenum on as a planter box treatment along with Captan.
Yep.
It was called Captan Molly 8.
Yes.
And he said we did that putting in about 2 ounces in a 50-pound soybean box. And then also from ST, just wondering what form of molybdenum do you use when you need to fertilize with that nutrient?
Okay, so first of all, putting molybdenum on the seed, we have found hurts germination every single time. We haven't been able to put molybdenum on once without it hurting germination. Now, I'm not saying it completely kills the seed, but I am saying we drop our germination percent at least a little bit. So if you want as good a stand as you can possibly get, I would not put molybdenum on the seed. What we do say is molybdenum is somewhat leachable, not super leachable like nitrate, but it will move in soil. So you could just throw some, let's say, sodium molybdate out there. There are many different sources of molybdenum. I don't know that I really care what you use exactly. I would look for something that's reasonably priced and available, and I would go broadcast it. And the reason why I say broadcast is then you have a lot less chance to screw it up. If you get too much in the wrong spot, you'll burn roots off, you could hurt seed germination, you could hurt your plants, you could hurt your crop. And the last thing I want to have anybody do is spend money on something they think is going to work, and then it ends up hurting them. So I'd rather see it broadcast, just keep the rate really low. By the way, the legal limit for molybdenum in a whole year is you can only put on 8/10 of an actual pound. That's it, 8/10 of a pound. So we would go much below that even. Just put a little bit on, try it, see, you know, run some tests, see if you're seeing any gain out of that. One other big thing we say about molybdenum all the time is make sure you have your pH up. If your pH is below 6, odds are molybdenum is not going to be very available for you, even though it might be in your soil. So lime and get your pH at least up into the 6s, and that's going to help you if you have a low pH.
Thanks for that question. All right, so this one comes from Les up in North Dakota. He said, could you guys please refresh my memory? I seem to remember that you guys were talking about a plant growth hormone called something like gibberellic acid, yep, and that it could potentially increase shoot growth in grass crops. Would that also work in lawns?
Yes.
And would that work for us in Northeast North Dakota?
Well, yeah, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. If you want your lawn to grow faster early in the season and late in the season when it's cold, and you want to do more lawn mowing,
now,
great.
Now, cold is relative here. We're talking yes, probably 40 to 60 degree daytime highs.
I would say 50 to 65 degree daytime highs, but yes. Yeah, I mean, I suppose if you get down to 40, fine. But I'm sad that I totally forgot about this when we're talking about biological products today or natural products. So gibberellic acid is something that naturally is created by plants, and the more gibberellic acid you have, the greater stem elongation. So the taller the plant's going to get, basically, and the faster it's going to get tall. Anyway, when plants are cold, they don't produce a lot of that, okay? So that's why they don't grow very fast, or you don't see much stem elongation. I don't care if it's your lawn, your wheat, your silage corn, whatever. You don't see much stem elongation when the temperature's cold. So you can take this naturally occurring plant growth hormone, spray it over the crop, and basically trick the crop into thinking that things are good, and you absolutely will see more growth out there. We've proven this in lawns, pastures, silage corn. It absolutely works. There's no question I would use it if I wanted more growth in any of those things. Now, what I care about in wheat is not stem elongation. I want yield. Okay, so if you want taller wheat, use it. But if you're after more yield, we just haven't found that it works. Same thing in corn. If you want more tonnage for your silage, it's great. But if you're after more yield for your grain crop, it's not. So it, just use it in the right place, and yes, it will work well.
All right. Yeah, we get so many questions in about liming, and this one comes from Billy. He said, what rate of lime would you put on a soil pH of 4.5 to 5.5? I want to get up to 6.5 in a cation exchange capacity of 15 to 18.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't know. What we need is the buffer index, the buffer pH, and that's going to tell you. So there are charts. So just look at your soil test. Look at what the buffer pH is. And then just look up. There are charts on the internet. Look at it from some university or a soils lab or whatever, and it will tell you. And then you have to basically run the conversion because they're going to give you how much actual calcium carbonate you need. And then you need to find out, all right, in my lime source, how much actual calcium carbonate is there? It's not that tough an equation to run. Talk to your soils lab, they'll help you.
Thanks for the question, Billy. We appreciate that. And thanks to everybody for the questions today. We had a lot of good ones there. Thanks for listening to our show, and be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.